Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The virtual Democratic National Convention wrapped up day two yesterday, and it featured the traditional roll call of states at which Joe Biden was formally nominated for president. Illinois' votes were cast by former U.S. Senator Carol Mosley Braun. Here she is.
Illinois.
Discrimination has denied too many black Americans the chance to own a home and build wealth. Joe Biden has a plan to end racist lending practices and help more people of color achieve the American dream of owning a home. This isn't just about racial justice. It's about stronger communities and more economic security for working families. Illinois cast 59 votes for Bernie Sanders and 122 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
The virtual convention also featured speeches from the Democratic Party establishment. President Bill Clinton, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and former Senator, presidential candidate, and Secretary of State John Kerry. And then Jill Biden, the former Second Lady and current nominee spouse, closed the night by telling Joe Biden's life story of tragedy and resilience. Another storyline came out of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, where much was made of New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of the most recognizable figures in the party, being given a mostly procedural role of formally nominating Bernie Sanders with just 90 seconds to speak. Let's take a listen.
Good evening, bienvenidos, and thank you to everyone here today endeavoring towards a better, more just future for our country and our world. In fidelity and gratitude to a mass people's movement working to establish 21st century social, economic, and human rights, including guaranteed health care, higher education, living wages, and labor rights for all people in the United States. A movement striving to recognize and repair the wounds of racial injustice, colonization, misogyny, and homophobia, and to propose and build reimagined systems of immigration and foreign policy that turn away from the violence and xenophobia of our past. A movement that realizes the unsustainable brutality of an economy that rewards explosive inequalities of wealth for the few at the expense of long-term stability for the many, and who organized a historic grassroots campaign to reclaim our democracy. In a time when millions of people in the United States are looking for deep, systemic solutions to our crises of mass evictions, unemployment, and lack of health care, in el espíritu del pueblo and out of a love for all people, I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
Again, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, better known as AOC, delivering one of the nominations for Bernie Sanders last night at the DNC. We're joined now by another progressive voice in the Democratic Party in Illinois. With the backing of the Justice Democrats, AOC, and Bernie Sanders, Marie Newman defeated seven-term incumbent Congressman Dan Lipinski in this spring's primary. The 3rd Congressional District includes parts of West and Southwest urban and suburban areas around Chicago. She faces Republican Mike Frazone in the general election in November, although it's worth noting that the district is not really competitive for Republicans. In fact, you might remember this as the district Republicans so thoroughly ignored in 2018 that an admitted white supremacist and Holocaust denier slipped through and won the primary. Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. Our lines are open for your calls and questions to Marie Newman, Democrat and Illinois' 3rd Congressional District nominee. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Is the future of the Democratic Party in its sort of centrist coalition, or is it more progressive? 800-222-9455. Or you can join the conversation on Twitter at 21st Show. With that, Marie Newman, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
So in your primary run, you were backed by members from the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party, right? AOC, Bernie Sanders, the Justice Democrats. I'm curious to hear your reaction to Representative Ocasio-Cortez's speech that we heard last night at the virtual DNC.
So interestingly enough, because I will say reporters asked me that very question a lot, not about specifically about the DNC event, but Interestingly, when people say that you were supported by Just, well, the funny answer to that is that actually I was supported by the entire party, almost every single corner, nook and cranny. So everyone from in the Senate, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren, and then 15 members of Congress from a wide variety of places. And then the organizations that supported me were everything from what some people call establishment to very innovative. So I like to say, in a very factual way, the entire party supported me as we move forward. So I just wanted to make that clear before we move forward.
No, although obviously a few notable exceptions in the Illinois sort of Chicago Democratic establishment or machine.
Oh, sure.
If you
yeah.
will.
That's,
yes.
That's, you know, well, I mean, everybody has to protect an incumbent, right? You know, so I, you know, we all move on and we unite after primaries. So, but you are absolutely correct, Brian, that yeah, not everybody was on the bus in terms of the incumbent support. So with you, but in terms of the parts of the party, which I actually don't even believe in that. I believe there's probably 50 wings to the party instead of the two that frequently are, you know, we are a party of many parts that come together, debate ferociously and come up with amazing solutions. The Democrats are the party of solutions, right?
Well, let me ask you that, because, I mean, you do have, like, I mean, the Democratic Party, especially in Illinois, I mean, you don't get to have supermajority status without welcoming in, you know, people of diverse ideologies, people from diverse backgrounds. I mean, in Illinois, I can think of, you know, there's the labor wing and the Black Caucus and the Latino Caucus. And the, you know, there used to be, although there are fewer now, downstate Democrats who were pro-gun and anti-abortion in some cases. I mean, what do you make of these, you know, factions within the party? Is the party unified? Can it find common ground in a Biden presidency?
Yeah, interesting. Well, I think time will tell for sure, but it sure looks like it is. If I had to diagnose this outside of the party, I would say that we're most definitely coming together. And I and it's not just an indicator that the convention has been demonstrative of that. I think that I see it on the ground. I see it when I talk to folks across the country, that we are all coming together with one objective. And funnily enough, moderate Republicans seem to be joining us in this. So what I would say is that we are a more unified party than I've seen in probably the last 20 years.
So let's take a step back for people who may not be familiar with how you got into politics. As I understand it, it starts with election night 2016. Can you take us back to where you were that November night? I can remember where I was in a newsroom with a colleague who had a giant tub of cheese balls as we were staying up later than we were. Cheese puffs, I guess, not cheese balls. But, you know, we were staying up later and later waiting for the results to come in. Where were you? And can you take us from then to where we are today?
Yeah, because it was very unusual for me. On election night, we spent it with my husband and I always spend it with this very dear set of friends, and we do that every election night. And we went into that evening with, you know, cheese and wine and some other things, and we're very excited from a long day at work and watching it. And it became clear, as you know, by 9:30 that this was not going to go well. I chose to stay up all night and watch the results. My husband went to bed because he felt like it was a fait accompli. And the next morning, after I did get a little bit of rest, I did something I have never done before, is I called all of my appointments for the day, my meetings for the day, and said that I just can't do it. I was just too upset. And I'm not a crier. I seldom cry, but I wept that day openly. I felt like all of our economic rights were under attack. A lot of people talk about our social rights and human rights and civil rights, which absolutely did happen. But our economic rights have been under attack. Our healthcare rights have been, and everything that I predicted happened. So I was distraught that day. So distraught that I ended up joining an organization called Illinois Women's Institute for Leadership. I was lucky enough to be inducted into that program and started to learn how to be a candidate and learn how to legislate. And from there, I launched my first campaign for Illinois 3 congressional district in 2017 in the spring of that year. In 2018, while I didn't quite make it, we lost by two points. It was very motivating to get up, brush yourself off, learn what you did wrong. And I did do things not well. We improved quite a bit. And we were successful this time.
What changed between 2018 and 2020, do you think, that made you successful?
Yeah, I think
it was
three big buckets, Brian. The first is I learned the importance of field. I don't think I quite understood how important field and how it can change elections. So the first thing that I did, we had a healthy number of volunteers the first time around, probably close to 1,000. We tripled that number and we built a coalition called Coalition for Change in Illinois 3. And it is a separate group, but they assembled themselves so that they could support my campaign. And now they're doing work across dozens of campaigns. That coalition was a group of 45 organizations, progressive organizations that came together and did amazing work. So the voter outreach we were able to achieve was astonishing. We knocked on over 110,000 doors. We made 400,000 phone calls. And I had 323 meet and greets in a year-long period. So I think that was the major force that put us over the edge. The second big bucket was messaging. The first time around, my former opponent was very, very focused on abortion. And so he made the entire narrative around abortion and then co-opted my narrative. So I couldn't talk about the economy and healthcare. And so we made it clear, literally with all the media, no disrespect, that you get one question about choice. And I'm happily pro-choice. I am proudly pro-choice and support all that is all women's rights. But you get one question around that because the district cares about its economic rights and improving the economy for everybody, making it work for everybody and having healthcare for all. And that's what I'm going to talk about. And we were very successful, I will tell you after that, that reporters got trained right away. And so we had a good run. Everybody understood what our solutions were about. And it became clear, the choice was very clear between Dan and I. And then in the third big bucket, it was fundraising, plain and simple. And this is my least favorite part of politics is that we started fundraising a lot earlier this time. We started in February, whereas in my first run, we started in June of that year. So that made a huge difference and got us over the edge.
I'm going to set aside my own bristling at the notion of reporters being trained and just tell our listeners there are no restrictions or requests of limitations on questions.
No, there's not,
that I'm
but
aware
they
of.
Also learned that I would stick to my one answer to one question. They were,
well,
I would say,
let me ask you this. Why Dan Lipinski, right? State rep, there are county positions. There are presumably a number of ways you could have entered politics. What was it about him that made you think, he is not the future of the Democratic Party, I am?
Right. It's a long list because again, the narrative was around that it was just one thing and it's a really long list. If you look at the basic tenets of the Democratic Party that we are for workers and working families and the middle class, and I think more now than ever in my adult lifetime, we are centered around that and I'm thrilled about that and I'm thrilled to be a part of that party for that reason. My former opponent was anti-immigrant, was anti-healthcare, voted against Obamacare, was anti-LGBTQ, really not fully supportive of unions and the labor movement. And at the end of the day, just was not very effective. And I think that you have to work hard at this job. People don't give you this job unless you are willing to work a really long day every day for as long as you are there. And I think for those reasons and many more legislative reasons, the people of Illinois 3 have bestowed their trust in me.
Is there no room for conservative Democrats anymore? I mean, is that, and maybe it should, maybe the answer is yes, that the party should be more ideologically unified. The Republicans have certainly done that and purging the more liberal or moderate Republicans in recent years. Should Democrats pursue that as well?
I think that we should rely on the voters. It's not our job to do that. Our job is to be in alignment with their district. So that's really why I won, is that my solutions and values are in alignment with this district. And that is why we're moving forward. So what I say to that, because I get that question a lot, is that not for me to say at all. And it's, I don't think it's even for the party leadership to say. I think that it is for the American public to vote for those folks that are most in alignment with their district. And then the sum total of those folks come together and debate the issues and come to the best possible solutions. So it is really about alignment with your district. It has nothing to do with what the party leaders think it should be or not be.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Marie Newman. She's the Democratic nominee for Illinois' 3rd Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. She unseated incumbent Dan Lipinski in the March primary. We need to take a quick break. Listeners, we do want to invite you to join our conversation. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to get into some more policy issues after the break. Our conversation with Marie Newman, candidate for Congress, will continue. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Illinois 3rd Congressional District Democratic nominee Marie Newman. She defeated longtime incumbent Congressman Dan Lipinski in the primary this spring. It's one of those districts that is pretty unlikely to go to Republicans, although there is a Republican running in it this year. But we are having a conversation with her about how she got into politics. And I'd like to turn now to where you might like to see the party go from an ideological or a policy standpoint, right? So as a candidate who has voiced support of more progressive policies, Medicare for All, the $15 minimum wage, Green New Deal, where do you think the Democratic Party should go?
I think we should be known what we are rightfully good at, and that is the party of economic solutions and innovation. So if you note throughout history, the Democratic Party has been the one that has fixed problems. Every time there's been an economic downturn, or a travesty of a wide variety of things, that we're the party that comes in and brings solutions. So I think that we should own that mantle of being the party of solutions. We will bring healthcare to everyone. We will bring a more modern and better and more efficient transportation infrastructure system to this nation, and it will bring jobs and it will bring economic growth. We will put a stimulus package together that will bring good paying jobs and workforce training to folks so that we can have a 21st century economy versus the one we're living in right now that is very backward looking. And I think we will be ready for the next pandemic if we get Medicare for All passed. Here's the funny thing. I think that that sometimes tragedy, and I do mean awful tragedy, we've lost over 170,000 souls in this country, is our best teacher. And I say that with a lot of sadness, that I think if the pandemic made it incredibly clear that our healthcare system was broken and that our economy, most of it was built on tectonic plates at the very least, and very precarious. So now it is incumbent upon this party to be the party of solutions and innovation and move our economy and our society forward.
And a few of your priorities on your platform also include income inequality. And you've also, as I said, supported Medicare for All. You tweeted last night, healthcare is a human right. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that was exposed during the pandemic is that this administration and his allies do not think that healthcare is a human right. They continue to break down Obamacare, which was a good step forward in providing healthcare for all in this nation. And they continue to legally attack it and make it almost impossible for folks to acquire healthcare in this nation unless you're very wealthy. So I think that when you read whether it's the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or any of our sacred documents, it is clear that freedom, life, and liberty are very important. And being healthy is a human right, period. There's just no getting around that. And I think that Trump and his allies believe that, in fact, it is a privilege or that it is a product that can be commoditized and bought and sold.
We have a couple callers on the line. Now I want to go and remind listeners, you can always join our conversations at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We'll begin with Ben in Rockford. Ben, welcome to the 21st. What's your question for candidate Marie Newman?
Hi, thank you. I was just wondering why we should think that Joe Biden will bring the progressive changes that the representative has been advocating for this time, when the convention seems far more geared around moderate conservatives like John Kasich, who have been given a more prominent role and more speaking time than Democratic figures like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Thank you.
All right, Ben, great question. Thanks for your call. Marie, what do you think about that? Do you think a President Biden would support these progressive policies?
Well, let me start by saying, yes, I do think that he will support. Will some of them not be to the extent that perhaps I would? That's probably a possibility. But let me address Ben's comment about the convention. I agree. I think that's fair criticism that when we have so many brilliant minds in this party, to spend a little more time on a Republican's speech probably was not the greatest strategy. That said, I'll give our party a little bit of latitude. We are in very precarious times. I'm immensely proud of all of the factions, and there are more than 50, coming together and pointing in one direction so that we can vote this dictator out of office in November. It is absolutely critical that we stay there. Ben is right, and it's fair criticism to say that we're not giving due time potentially to everybody in all parts of the party. That said, let's get this job done, and then let's fight and debate what should be done. Now, I'll give you one more piece of hope, because I am extremely hopeful right now. I believe that Joe Biden's plan around the green stimulus package that he presented was good. It had a lot of things in there that it's in my position papers around a green stimulus. So I am very hopeful around that. I also can assure you that, in fact, I will fight tooth and nail for Medicare for All, tooth and nail. And I think we have a great team coming in that will look at this from all sides. And we also have some folks from, again, all 50 factions of the party that I think we can move. So it is our job, because remember, my job is to be a representative for the people of Illinois 3, to bring that in and for everybody to bring in that spirit. And we have, District 3 is definitely interested in having Medicare for All. So so yes, I think Ben is possibly correct in his criticism, but I am hopeful that we will have Joe Biden move our agenda forward.
We have another caller. Steve in DeKalb has a question about specifically related to the pandemic. Steve, welcome to the 21st. Go ahead.
Hi, Marie. I'm glad to see you're there fighting for the 3rd District. I grew up in the 3rd District. I now live in the 16th, but I'm glad that you're there to support those issues. I wanted to ask about the potential for legislation that would force Trump to engage the Defense Production Act and create sufficient PPE for schools and businesses, and also testing capacity to allow schools and businesses to fully open, because my understanding is right now they don't have enough of either of those, especially rapid tests that would be more effective, and hiring contact tracers. We don't have enough contact tracers yet across the country. Is there legislation that could push that?
All right, Steve, thank you for the question. Go ahead.
Steve, thank you for your question. And I would say yes. In the next relief act that we are fighting tooth and nail on right now, I just got an update from members of Congress actually last evening on this, and there's a little bit of movement. One of the reasons that we're fighting for the relief act that actually passed the House and is sitting on the table in the Senate is that all of those things that you mentioned were included, is making sure that states and municipalities and counties got the money they needed for testing, PPE, other supplies, and contact tracers. So we are fighting for that. I think that there will be some money. It probably won't be enough, but we are fairly confident that some money will go to those needs for sure in the next relief act. So do be hopeful. It's just that none of this works out perfectly, as we all know.
All right. And we have one more caller, Nia in Springfield. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for calling in again. I know you called in previously. We weren't able to get to your question, but we appreciate you calling back and always encourage our listeners to do that. And you are on now with Marie Newman. Go ahead.
Good morning, Marie. And I some of my questions have been answered. I just wanted to I have been following her campaign, even though I resigned in Springfield. But the reason why I've been following is because I'm on the board of the Illinois Muslim Civic Coalition. And I know that you were endorsed by us and several of our members, you know, worked on your campaign.
Yes. Okay.
We might have lost Nia there, but thank you for the call. I guess... I don't know if you have any response to that or.
Just briefly, yeah, sure. I will say that. So in my district, Brian, we have a large concentration of Muslim and Arab Americans and Southeast Asian Muslim Americans. And they have been amazing advocates for our campaign. And we continue in this very significant time of when injustice is being presented, fighting for all of them. One of the things that I think that all of our communities, we have a very diverse district, we have all come together to fight and root out hate and bring justice. And I think it's one thing we're all focused on, and the Muslim Civic Coalition has been right there side by side with all of us.
Okay. And we're going to have to leave it there. Marie Newman is the Democratic nominee for Illinois' 3rd Congressional District. She's running against Republican Mike Frigilone. Marie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you for having me. And everyone be well out there.